This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something, I can really do this.
We just beat the WGA.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Jason Staples. As always, a reminder, you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. You can also subscribe to this podcast through iTunes or your podcast manager of choice. You can also listen to this podcast on Seminole Sports Radio from VSporto and listen on your mobile devices via the Seminole Sports Radio app available on iTunes or the Android Marketplace. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please rate the podcast on iTunes and tell a friend. The more people that we get listening to this podcast and rating us 5 stars on iTunes, the better it is, the more episodes we can get out. Also, we've now got a Facebook page for the Unconquered Podcast. You can feel free to follow along there, where we're going to be posting, you know, news here and there and interacting as well. And you can, of course, get more of my work on NoleDigest.com, some on the premium boards there as well. But plenty to get to today. Today we're going to be talking about the Florida State-Houston game, the Peach Bowl, one of the New Year's Six games, the noon game. Traditionally, the Peach Bowl being a Peach Bowl is a late night game on New Year's Eve. Always been a sort of New Year's Eve tradition for me. My wife was a little bit surprised when we got married, and she realized that New Year's was about college football. New Year's Eve was about college football, and New Year's Day was about college football. She didn't come from a football family. She was under the impression, I don't know where she got this, but she was under the impression that New Year's was, like, especially New Year's Eve, was a time when, like, you got all dressed up and you went to some party where there wasn't any football on, and you just sort of hung out, and I'm not even sure what you do with these things, but apparently you get dressed up and you sort of promenade around or whatever. I don't really know, but either way, that was what she was under the impression of. But since we've gotten married, my wife has seen the light. She's understood that that New Year's is really about college football, and the fact that I cover these games has been instrumental in convincing her that we don't really need to go dress up and go to some lame party to, I'm not even sure what the purpose of those parties is. But anyway, Florida State in one of the New Year's Six games, a noon game on New Year's Eve. And there's a lot to talk about here. I mean, this is an interesting matchup in a lot of respects. And, you know, I mean, Florida State did draw sort of the short straw in a lot of respects, in getting the group of five opponent in one of these New Year's Six games. In one respect, it is getting the short straw because you're not getting as exciting a game. I mean, if you're Ohio State or Notre Dame and you're facing Ohio State or Notre Dame, then yeah, that's a more exciting matchup. And, you know, it's one of those games that really does go down as one of the top matchups on the year and gets the fans excited, sells a lot of tickets. People are going to be watching closely and all that. And this game for Florida State is a little bit of a lose-lose because, you know, just like Northern Illinois a few years ago in the Orange Bowl, remember that was the game that in which the Florida State program peaked. If you remember Heather Dinich's evaluation of that game, that, yay, Florida State, you beat up on a MAC team in the Orange Bowl. Well, your program has peaked. They're nowhere to go. You know, they've hit their ceiling. Well, that was, as everybody recalls, a bit of an ill-timed article right before the 2013 season in which Florida State exceeded said ceiling a little bit. But this is one of those games where, you know, if Florida State, it's similar to that game, though, in regards to if Florida State wins this game, then nothing really gained. It's like, well, Florida State beat Houston. Congratulations. Florida State did what they're supposed to do. Whereas for Houston, this is a Super Bowl. For Houston, this is not just their season. I mean, this is like a national championship game for Houston. They get to play Florida State, and they get the chance to beat Florida State. And you know, if Florida State loses this game, then it's egg all over Florida State's face because, you know, they lost to a team that they really should beat. But let's not get it twisted here. I mean, Houston is a good football team. This is a team that has beaten already two Power 5 opponents, including one on Florida State's schedule, beating Louisville and Vanderbilt. And that win over Vanderbilt was legitimate. I mean, Vandy was not a good team this year. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Vanderbilt was not a good football team in 2015, and they generally aren't a good football team. But nobody made Vanderbilt look worse this year than Houston. I mean, going down the list, if you look at Vandy's scores, they lost to Missouri 10-3. They lost to South Carolina 19-10. The week after, so we'll go down the list. They lost to Georgia 31-14. They lost to Mississippi 27-16. They lost to South Carolina 19-10. They lost to Missouri 10-3. Right after that, they went to Houston and lost 34-0. This Houston team embarrassed that Vanderbilt team. And the week after that, they went to Florida and very nearly beat Florida. If you remember, Florida had to kick a late field goal to win that game, 9-7. So Houston blasted Vandy, the same Vandy team that Florida barely escaped a week later. And then Houston beat, and then Vandy beat Kentucky 21-17, and then they lost to Texas A&M 25-0. Again, nobody beat Vandy like Houston did. Maybe you could factor in Tennessee 53-28, similar margin, but again, not the kind of domination that a shutout kind of implies. So I mean, this is a team that has played some pretty good football. Early in the year, they beat Louisville. At Louisville, they won 34-31. Now, in both the Louisville game and the Vanderbilt game, this is a team that forced four turnovers in each game, had a significant turnover disparity against Louisville. They had a kick return for a touchdown. We'll break some of this down a little bit later. But this is a very opportunistic team, and it's a team that has not just won, but dominated most of the year. You look down their schedule, beat Tennessee Tech by 30, 52-24, it's 28. Louisville, 34-31. Texas State, same Texas State team that Florida State played, 59-14, comparable result. At Tulsa, 38-24. SMU, 49-28. At Tulane, 42-7. At UCF, 59-10. I mean, these are not close games. 34-0 over Vanderbilt. Finally got tested. Beat Cincinnati 33-30 in a game they really should have lost. Beat Memphis 35-34, another game that they probably should have lost. And that's a good Memphis team, remember. That's the Memphis team that beat Ole Miss. They beat them 35-34 again. Probably should have lost that game, but they've made the most of their opportunities. Then they lost close at Connecticut. And that's not a good Connecticut team. It's a bad loss. But that's the only thing separating them from being undefeated. Then they blasted Navy 52-31 and beat Temple 24-13 in the AAC championship game. This is a good football team, people. This is a much better team than the NIU team that Florida State played in 2012 in the Orange Bowl. A much better team. Now, you know, and the point spreads reflect that. The point spread opened, if I remember right, at 7.5, and it's stayed right around 7. It's sort of wavered back and forth between 7 and 7.5, depending on which book you're looking at. That's pretty close. That's closer than I would have expected for a game between Florida State and the Power Five or in the Group of Five champion. So This is a game again. It's a no win situation, a lose situation for Florida State. You got to go out and you got to beat Houston, and you got to more than just squeak by, in order to maintain your reputation. And Houston has nothing to lose, and everything to gain here. So in a lot of respects, that's what you got. Now all that said, again, there's no doubt Houston deserves a lot of respect. But all that said, I've gone back and looked at the tape, and Florida State is a really colossally bad matchup for Houston. Those of you out there who are betting people, and I'm not, but those of you who are out there who, you know, play the numbers, this is probably a good game to get on Florida State. I'll be surprised if Florida State doesn't win by multiple scores based on what I saw on tape. And that's not because Houston's not a good football team. This is a good football team. This is a legitimate, probably top 15 or 20 football team in the way that they've played most of the year. But in terms of matchups against Florida State, Houston could not have drawn much worse of a matchup for what they do after looking at them on tape. And really, as I went through, Houston is and actually, just talking a little bit with some usual suspects behind the scenes at Florida State, and kind of pitched some stuff at them. Said, you know, Houston, looking at them on tape, they look an awful lot like Louisville, particularly on offense. And I got back, yeah, that's what we thought too. Very, very similar team to Louisville, except that they don't have Louisville's defensive line. They don't have anything close to some of the personnel Louisville has on defense. But a very similar team overall to Louisville. And again, interestingly, right at the beginning of the year, and this is before Houston improved and before Louisville really got better as well. So, I mean, both teams improved pretty significantly from that week too. But that was a game where it went down to the wire. Houston won 34-31 in a game that was really a very, very close game. Now, again, Louisville turned the ball over four times in that game. It's a +3 disparity for Houston in that game, which ultimately was the deciding factor, the turnovers in that game. But all in all, I mean, if you look at the overall numbers in that game, they're pretty comparable. Against Louisville, Houston put up 5.02 yards per play. That's actually pretty good. 5.02 yards per play against that Louisville defense. Now, put it in perspective, against that same Louisville defense a few weeks later, Florida State put up 7.18 yards per play. So that's another 2 yards per play more than what Houston put up. But Clemson only put up 5.73 yards per play a week later against Louisville. So, I mean, that's actually pretty good. And then you look at what the Houston defense did against Louisville, 5.56 yards per play. Florida State, by comparison, gave up more yards per play against Louisville, 6.25 yards per play against Louisville than Houston did. Something to think about. Now, again, that was before Florida State kind of hit its stride. It was without Terrence Smith. And you'll recall that Trey Marshall got hurt in that game. And a lot of those yards came in a little bit later with Tyler Hunter having some trouble with James Quick, who did not play against Houston, Louisville's best wide receiver. Louisville was actually down James Quick and Jamari Staples in that game against Houston in week two. But again, Houston was still adjusting to a new scheme on both sides of the ball. I mean, Tom Herman, this is his first year. Todd Orlando, a defensive coordinator, this is the first year. So, I mean, they had a lot of improvement to make as well. So even though Louisville was down a couple of their playmakers early, Houston was in a very similar situation in terms of having a lot of room to improve there. So, you know, those are interesting numbers to look at. And I think those two teams are really comparable in terms of most of the product of what I see on the field, in terms of a lot of the overall athletic talent and so on. Now, you know, again, Houston does not have a Sheldon Rankins. They don't have a Devontae Fields. They don't have a Josh Harvey Clemens. Some of the guys that Louisville had on defense this year, Houston doesn't have. But in a lot of respects, Houston's defense is schematically a little bit more difficult to go against. I like what Todd Orlando does a little bit more than what Todd Grantham does. And we'll talk a little bit more about the defense in a moment, but I do want to start the analysis here with what I saw from Houston on offense when I broke them down. First things first, I mean, the most obvious thing is that their quarterback, Greg Ward, is the straw that stirs the drink. He's the guy that makes that offense go. He's a really, really good player. And he fits very much what head coach Tom Herman and offensive coordinator Major Applewhite want to do offensively. He's the kind, I mean, and this was seen before the season. Greg Ward is exactly the kind of guy that you want to have on the roster if you are a if you're Tom Herman coming in, given what Tom Herman likes to do offensively. It's a kid that runs like a wide receiver, more or less, has decent size. I mean, he's not a big kid. He's about 5'11", 185 pounds, a little slight, but runs like a defensive back or like a wide receiver, and throws well enough to give you problems down the field, particularly on the run. And actually, and this is part of why they're so similar to me to Louisville, is the guy that he most reminds me of that Florida State has played this year is Lamar Jackson from Louisville. Very, very similar player to Lamar Jackson. Explosive runner, sudden, not all that big, you know, decent size, not, you know, able to take a hit, but not going to run through you. He's not quite as lanky as Lamar Jackson. Maybe not quite as much top end speed as Jackson, but I think a better instinctive runner between the tackles than Jackson. You know, this is a kid that has really, really good vision when he tucks it, and they run a lot of different quarterback run schemes. They ran quarterback power. They ran quarterback, they ran standard, you know, quarterback lead. They ran quarterback draw. They ran a various forms of zone read and read option type stuff. They ran straight up option. They ran a lot of different 11 man running schemes, and that puts a lot of pressure on the defense because you're not able to really get the numbers to do what you want defensively. And his ability as a runner forces you to stay honest. And in the secondary, you can't play a high variety of coverages, and you got to be careful about how much true man you play, because if you turn your back to the quarterback, he's going to be down the field pretty quickly. And also, his ability to throw on the run is really, you know, that actually might be his biggest, where he has the biggest threat, is he does a really good job, and that's throwing on the run to both sides. He's one of those guys that actually throws on the run moving to the left pretty well as well. Both right and left, throws on the run. You can't let that kid break contain, because then he will make plays in the open field, and yes, even against the Florida State. That said, I don't think he has a comparable arm to Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson's got a big arm. Maybe not quite Michael Vick, but we're talking about a guy, you know, in terms of mobile quarterbacks who can really flick it. And you saw that late in the game against Florida State on that throw to Quick, where Quick got behind Tyler Hunter. And, you know, you have everybody covered. Everybody's right there. Brutus is there. You've got, you know, all the help there. The coverage is there. And he just flicked it and made one of those 50-yard throws that you just don't see quarterbacks make on the run. Flicked it to the back of the end zone, to the pylon, 50 yards for a score. That's the kind of throw that Lamar Jackson can make that Greg Ward can't, based on what I saw on tape. You're going to see him make a lot of good throws on the run, you know, making particularly throws to the sideline, guys coming back on comeback routes and scramble drill type stuff. He does a pretty good job getting the ball out and getting it out with some accuracy on the run there. But he can't make some of the window throws in terms of arm strength that Lamar Jackson could. So that is one difference between those quarterbacks. And Jackson was significantly better by the time he played Florida State mid-year compared to the three quarters that he survived against Houston, along with those four turnovers in that game. Now, I expect to see Florida State basically use the same approach to defending the Houston offense and Greg Ward is what they did against Louisville. You want to see what Florida State's going to do defensively against Houston? Go back and look at what they did against Louisville. And of course, Tom Herman knows that as well. He's going to look at this and go, yeah, we're most similar to what Louisville does. Let's take a look at how they did against how they defended Louisville. Here's what we're going to see. So there's going to be a little bit of a chess match there between the coordinators. But ultimately, what Florida State did against against Louisville was they refused to give up. They decided to sacrifice potential plays in the passing game against Lamar Jackson in order to prevent him beating them with his feet. I mean, FSU was willing to give up some plays to basically say we're gonna force you to beat us downfield, to beat our corners, to get over the top and make really good throws over the top, be precise against Jalen Ramsey and White and the rest. We're gonna force you to do that over beating us with your feet. And if you look at Lamar Jackson's day, 19 carries for 32 yards on the day, that's 1.68 yards per carry, they succeeded in that. And they kept him bottled up in the pocket. He didn't really get outside the pocket. And, you know, they focused on that aspect of things. Now, in the process, they gave up some passing yards. Jackson went 20 of 35, not all that good, 57%. It's okay. For 307 yards, though. 8.8 yards per attempt. That's not all that good defensively. It's one of the worst games that Florida State gave up in terms of passing on the year. But that was because they were willing to go ahead and let some of that go in order to limit what they could do on the ground. And I expect to see exactly the same thing against Houston. Now, one place where Houston is I think, a good bit better than Louisville is, unlike Louisville, Houston also has a very good running back along with Greg Ward in the backfield. If you look at Louisville, Louisville's leading rusher this year is Lamar Jackson, 734 yards. And the next leading rusher is Brandon Radcliffe, running back, 587 yards. And then another running back at 270 yards. And then they drop to Reggie Bonifant at 166. So they didn't run the football all that well, other than when Lamar Jackson was carrying the football. Brandon Radcliffe was pretty good, but under 600 yards and averaging 4.59 per carry from that position. Houston, on the other hand, Greg Ward Jr., their quarterback, over 1,000 yards this year. 5.85 yards per carry. And again, that includes sack yardage. So that's really impressive. But their running back, Kenneth Farrow, a senior, 220-pound big back, he's got some burst, almost 1,000 yards also, 949 yards, 5.2 yards per carry. And then they got a couple other backs that have gotten some carries, one just under 400, another just under 300. They've got some guys that you again have to account for, more than just completely keying on Greg Ward. Now, to me, again, if I'm Florida State, I'm treating this sort of similarly. Again, you have to treat it mostly like what they did against Louisville. The other team that you treat this like is Georgia Tech. Now, Ward in the Louisville offense, or Ward in the Houston offense, throw it better than Georgia Tech does, but it's, in a lot of respects, you have to treat it that way with the quarterback and the running back. You have to, in that kind of spread option kind of environment, you have to defend it similarly. And I think they will. And they're going to be willing to give up a play or two in the passing game in order to shut things down on the running side. Now, to me, the place where this really starts to break down for Houston, when I started looking at this matchup, when I started looking at what I saw on tape, is ultimately they're starting three freshmen, guard, center, guard. Redshirt freshman at guard, true freshman at center, redshirt freshman at guard. And this is Houston. This is not freshmen at Alabama. This is not five-star freshmen. These are good players. I believe the center was freshman All-American. Good players. But those guys are going to have to block Nyah Lawrence Stample, Derek Nnadi, Christmas, and that bunch from Florida State on the defensive interior. And I think that's going to be a serious problem for Houston. They're going to have to scheme around getting their butts kicked up front with Florida State's defensive tackles. Now, Florida State's defensive tackles need to go out there and do it. And if Florida State's defensive tackles don't dominate this game, then things could go sideways a little bit. But to me, that's where things really start to go sideways. If you're a Houston fan and you look at this, you go, that is not a good play. That is not a good matchup. Because Florida State is the one team that has the defensive interior. And you could have made a case for Louisville early in the year, maybe, with Sheldon Rankins and that group. But Florida State's been better on the interior than Louisville there. But Florida State's the one team that they face that basically can do what they want on that interior. And then you add Josh Sweat, you add DeMarcus Walker, and some of the Florida State should be able to limit what they do in that running game with their front four for the most part. And that's a problem if you're Houston. Because when I look outside, they don't have it's a competent wide receiver group. They've got a couple guys that are 6'3". They got an Oregon transfer who can run a little bit. But they don't have a wide receiver group that really scares you. They don't have a group of guys that's going to that makes you worry about getting beat over the top as much. Leading receiver DeMarcus Ayers, 5'11" guy. Good player, but he's not one of the better receivers Florida State's played this year, at least not from what I saw. Good player, averages 12 yards a catch though. And Florida State's willing to give that up. Particularly again because Greg Ward at 5'11", once you keep him in the pocket, not as consistent of a thrower. He missed a lot, missed high in the strike zone, low in the strike zone, little wide right, little wide left, putting the ball out there, but not with the kind of precision that you expect from a top level quarterback. Good player, but if you keep him in the pocket, he is 5'11", Everett Golson kind of size, a little smaller than Golson actually. And I think he's going to struggle with Florida State's length in the pocket. So the plan for Florida State is just to use those defensive tackles, use the size up front to build a wall and to basically say, you're going to have to throw over us and we're not going to let you outside. And I think, again, Derwin James, he has both a pass rusher and also as a spy or a robber is going to be assigned to Greg Ward. And Ward is not going to be running away from Derwin. So, that's where this matchup is not necessarily the best matchup for Houston offensively. I think they're going to have trouble moving the football. I think they're going to have trouble scoring points against Florida State. Florida State has the edge up front. And then when it comes time to making a play downfield to try to loosen things up, they're going to have to beat Ramsey and White. They're going to have to beat guys that are able to single cover them. And then when Ward does potentially scramble, he's going to have to get past. I mean, they're going to have Terrence Smith and Derwin James as the primary guys assigned to Greg Ward. Again, similar to Treon Harris. Florida State has played a lot of guys very similar to Greg Ward. Now, Treon Harris is not as good a thrower as Ward, but Florida had a lot better wide receivers out on the field than Houston does. And a big reason that Harris looked so bad throwing the football is because, again, at 5'11", he's having to throw over the top of some guys that, if you're able to keep him in the pocket, it makes things a lot more difficult. And again, Ward's going to have to deal with that. That's going to be something I think is going to be difficult for Houston offensively to handle. Florida State's going to basically apply the same, the Treon Harris treatment. Look at how they used Derwin James to shadow Treon Harris. Every time he started breaking out of the pocket, every time he got upfield, you had Derwin James right there. You're going to see a lot of that in this game. And I think that's a bad, bad deal. That's bad juju if you're Houston's offense. Now, if we look on the defensive side, this is a much better defense than I think a lot of people realize. And this is where I think the big difference is looking at going back to that NIU game, the Northern Illinois game back in 2012, the 2013 Orange Bowl. That NIU defense just didn't have any players. They didn't have talent. They couldn't match up. That game there was no chance. They had no chance in that game. Florida State could have lined up and run for 500 yards if they'd wanted to. Honestly, I think they should have. But ultimately, those guys couldn't compete athletically at all. They just weren't close. This Houston team is better defensively by orders of magnitude than that Northern Illinois team. And again, you go back to they held Vanderbilt to just a little bit less in terms of yards per play than Florida's defense did. Now, that was their best defensive performance of the year. But still, that tells you what their ceiling is as a defense. That's really good. And, you know, you got to give a lot of credit to what Todd Orlando is doing defensively there. I love what they do schematically. That said, a lot of what they do is schematic. It's a lot of smoke and mirrors. They don't have even the athletes, again, going back to what I was saying about their similarity with Louisville, they don't have the athletes on the field that Louisville did. I mean, you look at them across the front, they run a 3-4, and they go 265, 280, 275 across the front three. That is small. And then that outside linebacker, that buck linebacker, is 230 pounds. That is a very, very small defense. Now, they do a lot in terms of scheme to make that matter less. This is not a typical 3-4 like what you'd see with, say, Nick Saban at Alabama. This is not a team that is running a lot, that's two-gapping, that's going to have a 325, 330-pound space eater on the inside trying to gobble up two gaps and give the numbers advantage back to the defense like what you see at Alabama. Not what you see. But what they do, and what they do very well, is they are very, very aggressive. This is, they one gap out of that 3-4 look, and you're never quite sure of where they're coming from. They do a great job of disguising fronts, disguising coverages, disguising looks, stacking guys, you know, stacking their linebackers to make sure that that they're in a position to pick up the gap that they need to be. They one gap, so you know, each player assigned to one gap, and then they blitz a ton. But they don't blitz unsound. They don't leave guys uncovered. They do a lot of zone blitzing. I mean, this is Dick LeBeau type stuff. Going back to, you know, NFL Pittsburgh Steelers style 3-4 stuff. And what that stuff does is by bringing pressure from different places and being a bit unpredictable in where, what gaps you're going to shoot, what gaps you're going to try to attack, what they're trying to do is they say, they know we don't have a big athletic advantage up front. So we're going to try to make it so that you're going to blow an assignment here. You're going to have a bad angle there. They're trying to create bad angles. And we talked about this on this podcast before. What Florida State and every other offense tries to do in the running game is try to pick up a gap here or there. You use motion, you use pulls, you know, Florida State's bread and butter is the outside zone. What you're trying to do there is you're trying to create seams so that you can get a cutback, and again, creating gaps. What Houston is trying to do defensively is very much the converse of that. They're trying to create advantageous angles for their defensive front to get pressure in the passing game. So, you know, if you've got an offensive lineman that's trying to block from a disadvantageous angle, then, you know, you can get potentially a player who's not as good can still beat the player who's got a physical edge because he's blocking from a disadvantage. I mean, that's sort of wrestling type thing. You know, you start from the disadvantaged position, you still might be able to beat a guy who's better otherwise than you. So they use a lot of different smoke and mirrors to create those different angles, to bring a guy that you didn't account for. You know, maybe you've got a slide left protection and they bring more guys from the right than you can block. Maybe they bring an extra guy up an A gap. You know, there's all sorts of different things that they do to try to create pressure. They've got one, that outside linebacker, that buck linebacker, number 81, Tyus Bowser. He is a good pass rusher, 230 pounds, but he does get after it. Speed rush for the most part. But they, you know, they'll stunt. They'll do all sorts of things. They bring a lot of different safety blitz looks, so that, you know, they're going to primarily be in a 3-3-5 kind of arrangement against Florida State, and they'll bring that safety. They'll bring any of the three interior defensive backs. They'll bring corner blitzes. They'll bring all sorts of stuff to create negative plays. Their aim, what Todd Orlando is after as a defensive coordinator, and this is why Tom Herman hired him. What he's after is to create one negative play. He'll give up a 10-yard play. He'll give up a first down here or there. He'll give that up. But what he does not want to give up is big plays, first of all. So they're going to be sound in the secondary for the most part. And then What he's angling for is, particularly on first down, we're going to be really aggressive. We're going to come downhill. It's similar in that regard to Clemson, although Clemson does it out of a 4-3. We're going to come downhill. We're going to try to take away what you do well, and we're going to try to get tackles for loss by getting good angles, creating, you know, creating confusion up front in terms of who's got who, you know, who's got whom, who blocks this guy. You know, I thought you had him. No, I thought you had him. That's what they're trying to do. So Florida State's going to have to be absolutely sound up front in terms of communication with the offensive line to know who they need to block. Okay, you know, this is going to be the mic. We're going to slide this direction. If he shoots here, then we need to pass this guy. I need to pass this guy off, and you need to be there in order to prevent tackles for loss. Because what they're going for is tackles for loss to get you behind schedule and then force you to have to throw into the teeth of, again, a pressure package where you may not have time and you're thrown into a zone. That's what they're trying to do. But again, the problem is they are doing that. This is where coming into a bowl matchup, Florida State's going to have had multiple weeks to work on the looks that Houston uses, to work on making sure that the offensive line can communicate on all of these things. This is where this game probably is more difficult during the season than it is after bowl preparation for Florida State, because they've had plenty of time to adjust and accommodate to get used to what Houston does in terms of all that smoke and mirrors on defense. Now, listen, I will say this. If, you know, the day that Charles Kelly moves on, Todd Orlando is one of those guys that Jimbo Fisher will probably want to have on his list. After breaking down this tape and after looking at what he does, they run defense. They run a lot of defensive stuff, very similarly to what Fisher likes to have on his side, because he hates to go against it himself. This is not, you know, Fisher going against Randy Shannon here. Fisher loves going against Randy Shannon, but this is the kind of defense that offensive coordinators really don't like to see because of the problems that it can cause you up front. But here's the problem. Once Florida State's offensive line gets their hands on those guys up front and they do create a seam, the physical mismatches are still there. FSU should be able to run the ball on this team better than anybody else has all year by quite a bit. Partly again because of the bowl layoff. Partly again because Florida State has Dalvin Cook and he's going to run through tackles of guys that are 220 pounds. You know, guys that are 210 pounds. They're not very big. They're not a super fast, you know, defense up front either. They move well, but again, what they've done, they've been very well coordinated, and the advantage there is minimized in terms of bowl preparation. The other problem that they have, as far as I saw, is, and this was again something that I think is one of the thoughts behind the scenes with FSU as well. Their DBs, they've got some decent size here and there. Particularly number three, I'm going to remember his name, William Jackson, senior corner that they've got. They've got some decent size at a couple of spots in the secondary, but they are a little stiff. And they will give up some plays, particularly on double moves. Those guys will bite on double moves. And so, you know, this is one of those things. If I'm Jimbo Fisher, one of the things that I do early is I call a pump and go, or I call a couple double moves on the first drive or two just to go ahead and see if I can get an early score by giving Sean McGuire an easy throw downfield on one of the things that he throws best. Because those defensive backs have shown a propensity to jump double moves so far this year. And they just haven't played a whole lot of teams that can make him pay for that. Now, I'm not sure Florida State is one of those teams at this point, given the way that the Florida State receivers and passing game have looked over the course of the year. But I do think FSU is going to be able to run on that front, unlike most teams that they've played all year. Now, breaking it down in terms of some conclusions, a few other things to talk about in terms of this matchup, in terms of advanced stats. One of the things that I like to look at going into games is the five factors. This is a Bill Connolly thing from over at SB Nation, Football Outsiders. And he's basically boiled things down to five factors where, you know, if you win these factors, you're most likely going to win games. One of them is if you win the explosiveness battle, you win 86% of the time. You win the efficiency battle, that is, you have a higher success rate play-by-play, you win 83% of the time. If you finish drives inside the 40, with scores better than your opponent, then you win 75% of the time. You win the field position battle, average starting field position, you win 72% of the time. And if you win the turnover battle in terms of turnover margin, you win 73% of the time. So if we look down at the at Houston in terms of their five factors, they're somewhere between average and a bit above average on most of those five factors. Offensive explosiveness, they're 38th in the country. Efficiency, they're 30th in the country. Field position, they're 39th in the country. Turnover margin, they're 7th in the country. That's pretty good, obviously. That is a little bit, that is the one potential concern, and we'll talk about that in a moment. And then the thing that has made this team so successful, and the reason that Houston is number one, there is 12-1, and is the group of five representative, is they're number one in the country in finishing drives inside the 40. They average 5.68 points per trip inside the 40. That means they're almost always scoring a touchdown once they get inside the 40. That's one thing that Florida State needs to do well in this game. And it's one thing that Florida State has done well all year. If you look at Florida State in that regard, defensively, they've been pretty good in that regard most of the year. Houston on the defensive side, 57th in limiting explosive plays, 54th in efficiency, just above average in both of those, 8th in field position, 21st in finishing drives. Again, they've been very good in terms of red zone inside the 40, that sort of thing. And then you go down to Florida State again, pretty significantly higher in each of those categories, particularly on defense, 5th in limiting explosiveness and 18th in efficiency, 6th in field position. Florida State's defense actually 51st in terms of giving up points per trip in the 40. That's, I think, one of the keys to the game for Florida State is to make sure that when Houston does actually get the ball inside the 40, that they're able to stop, that they're able to limit what they do. And that's one of the two keys to me. The other key in this game, the number one thing is Florida State needs to finish drives and make sure that Houston doesn't just score every time they get inside the 40 like they have all year. And secondly, this game to me boils down to turnovers. If Florida State doesn't turn it over three or four times, Florida State wins by more than two scores, or wins by two scores or more. Let's put it that way. Because I think Houston, without significant field position help with, against Louisville, they lose that game unless or without that that kickoff return for a touchdown and without those major turnovers in that game. You go down, you look at the scores that they had, 100-yard kickoff return at the end of the third quarter. That was key. They had a key turnover that led to some other points. If Florida State doesn't give up, a huge, stupid special teams play and a couple turnovers, they win this game going away. Because I don't think Houston can block Florida State up front, and I don't think Florida State's going to have the same trouble, especially after a bowl layoff, blocking Houston's front that most of Houston's opponents did this year. Now, those of you who listened to this podcast last year will remember that I said going into the Rose Bowl that Florida State should win that game. The Florida State was all in all the better team compared to Oregon, had more talent on the roster. Was overall a better team, should win the game. But if Florida State turned it over a bunch, they could get run out of the stadium. That, you can go back, that's almost verbatim what I said right before that game. Florida State should win the game. We actually, on this podcast, we called the yards per play given up in the defensively pretty close to exactly right. Even offensively, we were pretty close. We basically said it boils down to turnovers. If Florida State turns it over a bunch, then they'll get run out of the stadium. If not, they should win the game. Well, they got run out of the stadium by turning it over five times in a row. In this game, it's similar but also different. In this game, it's not so much they'll get blown out of the stadium if they turn it over. If they turn it over a bunch, they might get beat. That's where this one's different. Last year, if they turned it over against Oregon like they had most of the year, they're going to get run out of the stadium, and they did. This year, they haven't turned it over much to begin with, but without turning it over a bunch, they're not going to get beat. And even if they turn it over two or three times, they still could potentially beat this Houston team. But Florida State needs to go out there and execute and take care of business, and they'll win this game by two scores or more. And, again, that's not disrespectful. That's not about disrespect toward Houston. That's about the matchup that I see. It's a matter of, you know, what I see up front, and a matter of Ward and the wide receivers at Houston not really having enough in the passing game to give Florida State all that much trouble in the secondary, unlike a couple of the teams that Florida State did play this year that could give them a little bit more trouble. And Florida State's had a ton of success against quality dual threat quarterbacks all year, and they'll be able to call on that experience, particularly with the development of Derwin James as that hybrid player in this game. All right, that's going to do it for us here on the Unconquered Podcast, on a slightly longer than normal Unconquered Podcast. But this will be our last show before the Christmas holiday. So needed to make sure we got everything in. We'll be back shortly after the Christmas holiday. So to cover a little bit more in terms of, I've had a little bit more of a chance to take a look at a few other things in terms of Houston. And there'll be a little bit more to break down there in terms of pregame. We'll be at the Peach Bowl. So we'll have some other news, I'm sure. But until then, remember that you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. You can also follow Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. You can find the Unconquered Podcast on Facebook and, of course, on iTunes, where you can subscribe and rate the podcast. The more 5-star ratings we get, the better. So thanks for that, for those of you out there who've already been helping us in that regard. And again, make sure to catch our next podcast after Christmas. But until then, we wish you a Merry Christmas and a happy holiday and all that other stuff. I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, a VSporto channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.